Hey, everybody. Welcome to Spoiler Piece Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Dave Riedel. My pronouns are he, him. I write about movies, and I am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Evan Crean. My pronouns are he, him. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living.
And my name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network, and I too am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
Indeed you are.
Mm-hmm. Indubitably.
Indubitably. That's like the two gophers on the Warner Brothers guy. They're always chasing their log when it gets cut down. Okay. Anyway, we're not talking about Warner Brothers cartoons. We're talking about movies. But before we talk about the movies on this show, over on our Patreon, we talked about the new sci-fi rom-com Moonshot. I feel like that should have reverb on it, like Moonshot.
echo.
Exactly. Echo. Moonshot. So anyway, we talk about that over on the Patreon. It's a lively conversation because we have so many opinions about this movie. Is it a rom? Is it a com? Is it a rom-com? Who knows? You'll find
out.
Did
they go to the moon?
Did they go to the moon? You'll find out if you become a patron for the bargain price of $5 a month. You get bonus episodes each week where we, if you're lucky, all have the same opinion about one movie, which we do this week.
Doesn't always happen.
And there are more than 200, maybe 250 bonus episodes for $5 a month. You get that. You get to vote in polls every month. And we'll have a poll coming up for April very soon. And it's a really good loose time over on the Patreon. So thank you to all our patrons who are patrons already. And if you like the show a lot, please consider becoming one. And now on to the regular show. So this week, we're talking about three movies. We're talking about Windfall, which is the Jason Segel. I almost said Jason Segel. I don't know why.
I said that today too. And I was like, what is wrong with
Jason
me?
Jason Segel, Lily Collins, Jesse Plemons. Then we're going to talk about Mothering Sunday, which is a new drama, English drama. It's late at night, folks. I'm a little
just another Mothering Sunday.
And then we're going to have the big swinging whatever new release of the week, All the Old Knives, or as I call it, All the Old Knives. Okay.
Yes. So
I'll take one stab.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's talk about Windfall, shall we? This is a thriller question mark starring Jason Segel, Lily Collins, Jesse Plemons, directed by Charlie McDowell, son of Malcolm McDowell and Mary Steenburgen, who also he directed a good movie. Not that this isn't good. he did The One I Love. I think that's what it's called, right? With Elizabeth Moss.
Oh, yeah.
He directed that.
I remember that movie.
Yeah. And he wrote this.
It was an early spoiler piece review.
Yes, indeed it was. And Jason Segel had a hand in the script. McDowell had a hand in the script. Andrew Kevin Walker had a hand in the script. This does not feel like an Andrew Kevin Walker movie. And anyway, here is your one sentence IMDb summary. We've returned. Hold on. My screen is loading. Sorry, everybody. Here we go. A man breaks into a tech billionaire's empty vacation home, but things go sideways when the arrogant mogul and his wife arrive for a last-minute getaway. Yes, that is accurate.
Oh boy, do they.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So
it becomes a drawn-out hostage situation.
Yeah, it does. So Jason Segel breaks into, you know, the mogul's house, and he's just intent on, you know, finding some cash, finding some stuff, getting in and getting out, which is what he's in the process of. He's in the process of leaving their home when Lily Collins and Jesse Plemons come in, and he's like, oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. And he, like, hides. He doesn't say that. And he, like, leans up against the wall, and then he's about to sneak out, and Lily Collins sees him, so he's just like, shh, and he, you know, grabs her, and he's like, Jesse Plemons, which is not what his name is in the movie. It's like, you
CEO
guys.
CEO is his credit.
CEO, right. They don't have names. That's right. It's
nope.
Man, wife, CEO, and gardener. Those are the four characters. And basically the whole movie is this sort of, would you call it a battle of wits? I mean, I guess. So what happens is Jason Segel's like, he's gonna leave, and he does leave. And, you know, he gets rid of their car keys so they can't follow him. He breaks their phones. He takes a gun that he finds in the house and tosses it in a fountain so they can't, like, shoot him. And then he's getting in his car and he sees, like, a security camera in this tree. And he's like, oh, God damn it. So he goes back to the house and he's like, you guys said there were no security cameras. And Jesse Plemons is like, well, I mean, there's not really. I mean, who knows where the video goes? It's in the cloud. And so then Jason Segel, he gets the gun from the fountain, or he got it anyway, and he locks him away. And, you know, he says, all right. Then they get out. And then he says to Jesse Plemons and Lily Collins, I need money. And they decide on $500,000 so he can start a new life and disappear. But the catch is,
which is a funny negotiation, I might add.
Yeah, it is kind of a funny negotiation, because at first Jason Segel's like, $150,000. And Jesse Plemons is like, is that really enough? And so they negotiate him up.
But not too much, because then he wouldn't be able to carry it.
Right.
Like, which I have to say, I am so glad somebody talked about the logistics of carrying that much money. So I was very
happy. I should mention that there is a James Bond movie starring Timothy Dalton called License to Kill, in which a character gets $5 million in two suitcases. And the, I'm not going to mention his name because we don't want him to call the show, but the bad guy says, it's all in 20s and it's very heavy, but it's difficult to trace. And it's like, oh, yeah. So this is a little throw. I mean, I don't know if they saw that movie, but anyway, yes. They talk about the weight of the money, and then they have to wait for it because it takes 24 hours or something like that. But it turns out that Jesse Plemons has had some affairs. So when he calls his assistant to get the money, it's not that big a deal. And then it's just a waiting game where Jason Segel has to stay awake all night to make sure that they don't run off into the wilderness. And then they learn things about each other, and then blah, bitty, blee, blee, blue. And then it continues on. And you realize that Jesse Plemons is the world's worst human.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, he's one of these characters who actually says at one point, he's a billionaire, by the way. And he says at one point, you have any idea how hard it is to be a white guy these days? You know, and this is
a rich white guy.
Yeah. It's like, I don't really, but at the same time, it's probably not so hard. There's one particular rich white guy who I won't name, who just got a Grammy, even though 5 years ago he was, quote, canceled, unquote. So,
because cancel culture is not.
That's right. So anyway, what did we think of Windfall? We can get into the ending and stuff like that. But what did everybody think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that ending. Woo, it's a doozy.
Yes.
I liked this.
Me too.
I thought this was, it's a little bit of a slow start, but that's okay because I love Jesse Plemons. I love Jason Segel. And I like, Jesse Plemons picks such interesting roles, and I love his career. And he just brings the most to every single character. And Jason Segel's great too. And Lily Collins was good. I don't think I've actually ever seen her. Yeah, I don't think I've actually ever seen her in anything really. And she's really surprised. I was surprised just because I hadn't seen her in anything. But yeah, I liked this. I liked this a lot more than I thought I was going to. And it's tonally jarring, which doesn't always work for me. But yeah, it really worked for me here. I dug this.
Evan?
Oh, me too. I really enjoyed this. I like how narrow in scope it is. I like that it's basically like a three-person movie, with the exception of when the gardener comes in a little bit later. I like that it's like there's stakes to it, but it's not like sensationalizing those stakes. It's not like a pulse-pounding thriller, which I love. Mm-hmm. Like, I love an exciting thriller, but I love that this is like a character piece where we're seeing these people sit in rooms, talk to each other, and kind of like pick at each other and try and find out more. But like, no one really knows too much about each other. Like, we don't know why Jason Segel is there exactly. We don't know exactly what his motivations are, but it still works.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think the fact that they keep it just so narrow and just put these actors together and let them play off each other in these characters works extremely well and makes for like a really a really interesting story that might otherwise be kind of just like flat in one note.
Mm.
I so agree with you. And I also really love that we never learn Jason Segel's true motivations. And we never really learn much about any of the characters, just kind of pieces here and there. Like Lily Collins had a tattoo that she loved, but it's removed. She started removing it, laser removal, because Jesse Plemons didn't like it, but she loved it. And we learn that. And, you know, we learn about Jesse Plemons' affairs and he's just so terrible. But we never really learn too much. But the little tidbits we do learn and really mostly just bolster what we are witnessing from their behavior. And it really is a testament to sometimes exposition is necessary and sometimes it's great, but we don't really need exposition. You don't really need dialogue in the way that some films use it to do character developments. Like, we don't need to know their whole entire backstories to actually know their backstories, because their actions are reifying their backstories. We're witnessing it. We don't need to have all of these specific details. And so I think it's just, it's done really smartly and it's acted so incredibly well. And they all have really great rapport. Like you said, Evan, playing off each other.
Yeah. And getting to what you were saying too, it's, like, we can learn a lot about them based on a little amount of dialogue. Like, Jesse Plemons' character especially, we learn a lot about what kind of scumbag he is from, like, the way he, you know, is complaining about what it's like to be a rich white guy and all the pressure. And then, you know, his rant about freeloaders and people wanting to get something for nothing. And it's, you know what kind of scumbag he is, and just based on a couple of rants, and you know that he is a terrible human, even though we don't get to see the full extent of it. We've only spent, you know, a day's time with this character, but we know exactly the ways that he's a scummy person, especially in how he treats the gardener too. He's just rude and shitty to him and doesn't care anything for him. And then, you know, later on when the gardener, you know, gets spooked and tries to escape and he accidentally slits his own throat on the glass by tripping and falling on it. And Jesse Plemons' character is, you know, screaming and yelling and like, oh, it's his fault, he's an idiot, and ranting and raving, but does literally nothing to help while this guy dies in Jason Segel's arms and his hands are just covered in blood.
Yeah.
You know exactly what kind of guy he is based on that reaction.
Yeah.
Yep. Actually, we learned it even earlier. You're so right. But we learned it even earlier because he's such an asshole to his assistant when he's asking for the money for her to get. He's like screaming at her. And I mean, I guess you could chalk it up to he's tense because he's being kidnapped, but no, he's just
He never really takes Jason Segel seriously, though, even though.
That's true. That's true.
But also, I just want to throw out there real quick. I liked this a whole lot less than both of you.
That's a shame.
I didn't dislike it. I'm such a broken record, and people who listen to this show are going to be like, bullshit. But I kind of figured out where it was going pretty early on. And especially once the gardener died, and I was like, there's broken glass everywhere. Who's going to be doing the cutting? And then it's Lily Collins. And so I was like, all right, so they've kind of been the person you learn about the most, I think, is Lily Collins. And you learn, A, she's a survivor. B, she hates her husband. C, she's unhappy with her life. And you can just kind of see her formulating, you know, Jesse Plemons says to her at one point, you've got to get close to this guy so we can like work him. And you can just see the wheels turning in her head like, well, I'm going to get close to him. But I'm gonna work him for me, not for you. And then she kills everybody.
Yeah. True story.
Uses a piece of broken.
That's something I did.
Oh, go ahead, Evan.
I was going to say that was another thing that I liked was the emphasis. She tells a story about how on her wedding day, she was looking down at her feet and thinking about like, once I take the step over the precipice to, you know, get married, and then it's like my life's in this whole trajectory, and there's this whole emphasis on people's shoes and their feet in the movie, and it's like we keep seeing her feet and her tattoo, and this idea of her like stepping over the precipice later when she goes to grab the money, and she feels like she has the option to maybe take the money and run, and we see her debating it, and this whole idea of like Jason Segel's shoe keeps coming untied, and then he like has to bend down and tie it, and then that's when he ends up getting whacked in the head and she ends up, you know, taking him out. And I thought that was a cool,
this is a cool idea
subplot.
Yeah, and she's gonna get away with it because I would assume that there is no security camera footage for her to pull this off, but she sees this opportunity. She can kill Jason Segel, and then she can kill her husband with the gun and say, oh, you know, what happens after the credits would be when the police are there. It's like, oh, he shot my husband, which she does place the gun in Jason Segel's hand. And then I hit him over the head, you know, I got myself free and hit him over the head with a, what it's like a statue, right? Or a piece of art in the form of a statue. And then, hey, she gets away scot-free. And you get the feeling that she does need the money because they mention something about like the prenup when they're having the money negotiation with Jason Segel. Jesse Plemons says something to her to the effect of, he's like, you weren't this hard a negotiator during the prenup. And I was like, oh, file that away, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, I did think that, the second day waiting for the money to arrive, that was tense. And then when the gardener showed up and Jesse Plemons was clearly writing something that he shouldn't have written on the piece of paper, which leads to him getting spooked, as Evan said, he writes, you know, the gardener's like, oh, I planned this whole thing. I made a sketch. If you sign off on it, I can just go ahead and start getting the materials and start building it. And Jesse Plemons is like, sure. And he writes, instead of signing it, he writes, call 911 on the sheet. And then Jason Segel sees the gardener looking at the sheet and going, oh shit. And then it all turns south. By the way, I want to add that it was a good idea to have Jesse Plemons' character, the CEO, talk about being a rich white guy in front of the not white gardener who is probably working very hard for a living, and just an extra bit of just like, this guy sucks. Anyway,
was there other stuff aside from just kind of being able to predict parts of the movie, like other reasons why you weren't as into it?
Well, you know, I really like Jason Segel a lot, but I had a little trouble taking him, maybe like Jesse Plemons, I had a little trouble taking him seriously in this part. I mean, but I think that might have also been his character, because his character is not like a badass. Like he fully has every intention of like breaking in, getting the stuff and leaving, and just shit just goes sideways, as it says in the IMDb one sentence description. And so, yeah, and I liked the use of space. I thought the use of space was very smart.
Yes.
And and I thought that Lily Collins, who I don't really, I you know, everybody was complaining about Emily in Paris. So I was like, I'll watch this. And then I got like 10 minutes into the first episode and was like, nope. So so that's the only thing I think I've seen her in. And I know she's Phil Collins' kid. That's the only thing I know about her. So I wonder if she plays drums. But, you know, can find that out later. Yeah, I thought that the best thing about it was her. I thought it was like a really smart kind of slow boil simmering performance. And so when she lets out that primal scream after she bashes Jason Segel over the head, I was like, you know, I don't know if you're a good person either, but that scream was well earned, lady.
Yeah, I think you're onto something, Dave, in that Jesse Plemons, I mean, he's always amazing, but he's got the juicier role, and it's the flashier role, it's the showier role. Jason Segel it's not a flashy role, but he's playing off of that really, really well. But Lily Collins really does have the hardest role of all, because it's so deceptively calm and kind of quiet for so much of the film, but there's so much going on under the surface. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think they're all great here, but yeah, I'm agreeing with you, Dave, that yeah, her performance is really something
Thank
special.
You. Yeah, the thing that I picked up on, and I don't know how much attention I was paying to it, but I started to realize like how much she was just observing everything. You know, she's just, her eyes are always moving back and forth between the two of them, and she's looking at the space and she's doing this and doing that. And I was just thinking, there's something to this woman that we're not, I don't know if it's going to be some kind of reveal, but there was something going on with her that was interesting to me. That was more interesting than Plemons and Siegel. Plemons and Siegel, that sounds like a duo. They should redo You Make My Dreams by Hall & Oates. So, so anyway, I mean, did anybody have any closing thoughts about Ye Old Windfall? Or aside from the fact that you two both really liked it, and I'm just kind of like,
Yeah, I was just so pleasantly surprised because I had not heard really great things about it. And
I hadn't heard anything.
Except for, yeah, it didn't get a lot of great reviews. There's a podcast that had a really good review of it, Piecing Podcast. But aside from that, so I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. But yeah, no, I really was very pleasantly surprised. I liked it a lot.
Okay.
And that ending, a good ending.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Evan?
I laughed when they were watching Three Amigos when they had their outdoor movie night. That was an interesting choice.
Like that.
Yeah.
Did you also notice that Lily Collins and Jason Segel are laughing and Jesse Plemons is not?
Yes.
Miserable.
I did. And they both took note of that. Or at least Jason Segel took mental note. You see him look over, see Jesse Plemons not laughing and think, what the fuck is this guy's problem?
Yep. Well, okay. So that is, I was going to say that's Mothering Sunday, but that's our next movie. That was Windfall. Now we're going to talk about Mothering Sunday. So IMDb one sentence summary, and this really is one sentence. A maid living in post-World War I England, or World War I, as I thought when I was a kid, World War I England, secretly plans to meet with the man she loves before he leaves to marry another woman. Intrigue. Directed by Eva Husson. Written by Alice Birch from the Graham Swift novel, starring Odessa Young, Josh O'Connor, Colin Firth, Olivia Colman, and Glenda Jackson for a scene, which is crazy. That is definitely the one sentence summary. First of all, I'm just going to go ahead and get this out of the way. I really liked this a lot.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. Who's surprised here?
I'm slightly, not massively. Yeah.
I like quiet, you know, rage-filled movies where everything is just brimming under the surface, because I didn't realize that Mothering Sunday refers to Mother's Day, and you learn that Colin Firth and Olivia Colman's kids are dead because of World War I, and then four of the five children of this other family are dead because of World War I. And then the fifth son is going to marry, he's going to marry, I guess, their daughter. Is that it? Yeah. I don't know who's going to, there's marrying. So anyway, the maid, Odessa Young, Jane.
There's marrying.
Yeah. She's having an affair with the rich son. Secret affair, a clandestine affair, if you will.
Right, with like the most British noble name, Paul Sheringham.
Yeah,
Paul. He's got the like the monogrammed cigarette case and ring.
Yeah, but you know, it's one of those things where you can tell that like he doesn't like where he's going in life, and he's going to marry this woman he doesn't want to marry, and he's in love with Jane Fairchild, the maid, Jane Fairchild, which could either be, a porn star name, or it could be the name of somebody in post-World War I England. You know, it's one of those names. And so it's just this very slow, not slow, that's the wrong word. It's this very deliberate moving back and forth in time. It goes from this post-World War I period to, I guess, would you say just like right before World War II, and then, you know, later in life, and then really later in life. But it goes back and forth between all these time periods. And what happens is the big thing is, you know, Mr. Paul Sheringham is having this affair with Jane, and he's supposed to go have lunch with his soon-to-be fiance and Colin Firth and Olivia Colman and her parents and do-do-do-do-do. On the way, he dies in a car accident. And the whole, it's not really a mystery as to whether did he do it on purpose or not, because I was talking about this with Evan off mic. I'm pretty fucking sure he killed himself on purpose.
Yeah, it did strike me that way.
Yeah.
But I mean, based on the way he says goodbye to her when he's leaving, it has a finality to it. And you could read it as, okay, he knows he's engaged. He's going to be married. Like, this is the end of their affair. But it just, there was a somberness and a quietness to it to me that indicated that, like, he was probably going to kill himself.
Yeah. And if he didn't kill himself, all of those million unfiltered cigarettes he smoked were going to do it first. I mean, oh my God.
So many
There's
cigarettes.
There's more smoking in this movie than in all of Quentin Tarantino's movies combined.
Right. But also, I mean, a lot of nudity. Let's talk about how this week is kind of funny, because we have two movies where we see a lot of men's butts. It's a butt heavy week between Chris Pine and Old Knives.
And it's also this. Some blurred frontal nudity too. Yeah. Yeah.
Male and straight nudity. Up frontal nudity. There's a scene later where it's not blurred. It's a lot of full frontal nudity in this one. A lot of
wait, are you talking about male full frontal nudity?
Yes.
Is not blurred?
Yeah, Paul. Yes, Paul.
I still thought it was blurry.
Oh no, there was a scene later where it wasn't blurred.
Yeah, he was like kind of standing, you know.
Yeah, no, I know what scene you're talking about.
Winnie the Poohing, Donald Ducking, whatever you want to say. He was wearing a shirt with no bottoms.
Yep. Winnie the Poohing, I love it.
But yeah,
there's also a lot of female frontal nudity.
Is there?
Yes,
my
I was
Lord.
Just getting to that.
I mean,
I was. There's
go
a
ahead.
Scene. So he leaves the house and she's just wandering around his house completely naked, just going from room to room. And I was feeling like, this has to be the longest nude scene outside of porn. <It's> like, she spends like a quarter of the movie just completely naked, like full frontal nudity.
Yeah, but she's taking a leisurely stroll around the house and seeing like what it's like. And she's eating the savory pie that he left for her, drinking a beer.
Drinking a beer.
You know, smoking a cigarette. And looking through the library because she's an avid reader, as we learn. And then later mm-hmm. in her life, she becomes a very successful novelist, which mm-hmm. I thought that by, I just want to throw this in here before I forget. I thought that this movie is a really great example. It's really hard to make movies about writing. And they yes. wisely chose to make this movie about the writer and allude to her work rather than her sitting at a typewriter going like, mm-hmm. oh, let me type out this sentence. Oh, so stuffy in English, you know? Yeah. And I just found this whole thing to be very smart and very nuanced and very good at the whole English, you know, I'm not going to tell you exactly what I'm thinking, but you can tell that it's just below the surface. And one day I will explode in a cascade of emotion and then I will button it back up because I'm English. Like when Colin Firth is, you know, telling her, I can't believe that nobody figured out, except for, of course, the other staff, that she was having an affair with Paul. Like, it never occurred to Colin Firth that her reaction was such that maybe they were closer than he thought they were. I don't know.
He seemed kind of in a daze, though, himself.
I think
so,
he was.
Mm-hmm, and I'm wondering. Probably because it was like triggering things about his own dead children.
For sure. Totally.
But yeah, so that might be why he didn't really pay. Because like when she comes back home or to his home, he's like, oh, Jane, there you are. Like it's so, like, he's like off in like dreamland. So anyway, but maybe that's why he wasn't thinking about, why is she having such a strong reaction?
Yeah. I also liked how Olivia Colman at the, near the end of the movie when Jane is helping her get undressed for the evening, because Olivia Colman's just, she's so shell-shocked that she can barely do anything. Although I get the feeling that Jane has done a lot of undressing for her just because of, you know, World War I trauma, let's call it that.
Mm-hmm.
And she says to Jane, Jane was, you know, abandoned by her mother and raised in an orphanage and started working as a domestic person when she was 14. Is that what they said? Olivia Colman says something to the effect of, you know, Jane, you're so lucky that you come from nothing because you have nothing to lose. And I was just like, I don't know if I've ever heard that in a movie before. And
it
also
was brutal.
In such a, it's supposed to be, it's not supposed to be comforting, but but in such a way.
But like inspiring or uplifting or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, but it's just,
her character
just so.
Thinks that it is.
Yeah.
Right, but right.
It's so like kind of cruel and heartless without yeah. meaning to be. I mean, I'm sure the writer meant it to be.
Right. But her character yeah. didn't mean it to be.
Right. And you know, Jane is such a master of just like, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. As you learn over the course of the movie that she's just like, oh yeah, totally. You're right. Except she doesn't say it like that. And you also get the story of how Jane meets her future husband, who seems like a very wonderful man who loves her very much, who sadly dies of cancer. I mean, just
of a
like
brain tumor.
Yeah.
Brain tumor, diagnosed, but shortly diagnosed way too late to do anything about it.
I'm not sure they even could have at the time, to
right.
be honest.
That's true.
I was just thinking, like, I don't think they really had the techniques or the surgery available to be able to do much of anything for a brain tumor.
Right. Yeah. And I liked, even though we don't see much of their courtship, I liked that he was just so respectful and took her seriously, you know? And it's just like, you just don't see that in movies a lot. I mean, it's just such a strange thing to say. You don't see men taking women seriously and being respectful a lot in movies. And he,
no, you don't. And he, thanks, Dave.
Yeah. And he no. just, from the moment he meets her, she actually kind of, you know, is sort of judging him for the books that she works in a bookshop at, she leaves the Niven's house, the Colin Firth, Olivia Colman house. She goes to work in a bookshop because I think she can't bear to work, you know, near Paul, what was his name? Schadenfreude, Sheringham.
Schadenfreude.
Paul Schadenfreude.
Yeah, Sheringham. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Paul, even though he loves her, doesn't even take her seriously at points, it seems.
Right.
He seems to be like mocking her love of, you know, literature, especially kind of like lowbrow stuff. You know, like the Stevenson and other kinds of like adventure-y stories. He seems to kind of like look down on that.
Something I really love about her husband, though, talking about taking her seriously, I love when they're on their date and he's like, how did you know when you were a writer? And she's like, oh, I don't know. And he's like, no, you know. And like, I love that. I love that that perceptive nature. Anyway.
Yeah, and she says there were three moments. Mm-hmm. One, yes. I was born. Two, Mr. whatever his name is who runs the bookshop gave her a typewriter. And then the third one, she's just like, that one's just for me. Kind of like Tom Hanks at the end of Saving Private Ryan in the rose bushes.
Mm.
He's like, nah, seriously, what? And she's like, nah. And then he takes a copy of Virginia Woolf's, I'm assuming, latest, you know, piece of work and puts it on the table and slides it across to her. And you can just tell she's like, this man understands me. You know?
Yeah. Very specifically, it's A Room of One's Own,
yeah.
which is so pivotal and impactful because she talks about Orlando before in the bookstore yeah. and how great it is. Yeah. And I love that he gives her or shows her A Room of One's Own to show the importance of women's autonomy and independence, especially when it comes to creativity. Like, it's just, it's the ultimate gesture of support. Yeah. Like, I see you, I understand you, I respect you. It's so lovely.
And it's also, and it's like, it's not just like him doting over. She clearly really, she's fascinated by, he's a philosopher. He's a, by trade, you know, he's got a degree and I think an advanced degree in philosophy. And she's like, well, you can tell me about philosophy. He's like, you don't want to learn about philosophy. She's like, no, I do though. He's like, oh, wow. Someone who takes my work seriously.
Yep. You know?
So I thought that their whole romance was really wonderful and sadly bittersweet because one, he's not in the movie very much. And then two, you know, he dies. I mean, they're older. I mean, he's clearly got some aging makeup on and they've grayed him up a little bit. So I don't know how old they're supposed to be, but older. And then the movie ends with Jane living alone, presumably in London, played by Glenda Jackson, winning yet another huge award. And the press is at her door. They're like, you won the whatever. And she's like, eh.
She's like, thanks.
I won them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just, I really, I don't know if enjoyed is the right word, but I could actually, you know how a lot of times I say it's like, I really liked this. I don't ever need to see it again. I could watch this movie again. I just, it's a movie that like, it has nuance. So you need to watch it again to like see all the sideways glances and the stares and the, and the, you know, the looking across the room. And there are actually a couple of moments. There's one moment when Jane is serving at a dinner and she keeps staying in the dining room for a long time to like be closer to Paul. And one of the other women working there, she's like, you're staying in the dining room an awful lot. And she's like, yeah, I'm just being attentive. And you know that the other woman's like, even though she's kind of a dope, you learn later, or at least that's what Olivia Colman says. She's like, I just think there's something going on between you two, but it's, you know, very quiet and stately. Did we all like this? It sounds like we did.
Yeah, I did. Oh, Evan's a no. I did. I love Odessa Young, and she's amazing in Shirley. I really loved her in that. I liked her tremendously in this. And Sopé Dirisu, who plays her husband, is so good in this, mm-hmm. and also in His House, which that's such a great movie. So, and Colin Firth is great. I always love seeing him. He's great in this role. Olivia Colman is great in her role. Yeah, I really liked the acting, and I really loved the cinematography in this. I thought it was quite gorgeous. So mm-hmm. I really liked it. But Evan, I want to hear why you're suspicious.
I'm a little more lukewarm on it. I think I also really like the cinematography. I think the score is really good as well.
Yes, agreed.
Especially in those kind of like very emotional moments. And I do like the performances, the main performances. I didn't think the guy who played Paul Sheringham, I didn't think he was particularly good. Josh O'Connor. I also didn't feel a strong spark between him and Odessa Young, but I think Odessa Young was great. And I think Colin Firth and Olivia Colman were great. Although I feel like for a while, Olivia Colman felt kind of underutilized in the movie, but really it's just like, that's just the plot. That's her character. She doesn't have as big of a role. It's not her story. But I feel like the both of them, Colin Firth and Olivia Colman, really did such a great job of conveying the grief of parents who've lost children, especially parents of this era. Like, you could tell that this was such a blow to people to have kids and have like all of your kids wiped out by war and have nothing you can do about it and just have to like somehow go on living your life or try to pick up the pieces for whatever, you know, kids might be left. And so I think that part of the film was really compelling. And I think there are a lot of really compelling emotional moments in this, but I think for me, it's really just too deliberate. And I don't love the jumping around in time. Not that I don't like that on principle, but I don't think it's done well for at least a good half of the movie where they're doing it pretty heavily. And I just don't think the transition is effective. And I really hate how it jumps between periods where have a decent space between the periods that you're jumping. Like, to me, it was not always clear how far forward in the future or in the past we were going, in a way that I feel like was the editing's fault and not an issue of, oh, I just don't like, you know, movies that jump around. Because once the car accident happened and once it became more about the future state story, then it kind of leveled off for me and I was like, okay, I'm more into this now. But it's a really somber, sad movie. So
yeah,
like, I feel like this is something to be prepared for going in. You know, it's, I didn't know going in that, you know, he was gonna die in the car accident and then she was gonna meet someone who also dies of a brain tumor.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa. Oh my God!
Dead,
this poor
dead
woman.
lover, dead husband, dead children. Yeah. A lot
but
of death.
They even make a little joke about that though, because he says, the husband says to her, "It's like, you're gonna write, after I die, you're going to write your greatest piece of work, and I'm not gonna be alive to see it." And then she just makes a joke out of it. She says, "Yeah, all the men in my life have to die for me to do my best work," and it's just like, and then they both laugh because, like, I guess what else can you do, you know? But it also shows in that moment just like how well they know each other that she can make a joke about his death and he understands where she's coming. It's not about the fact that he's dying. It's about, you know, just tragedy. It's about tragedy generally. Anyway, so, but I hear you, Evan. I understand those. I do remember the first time the husband popped up. I was like, who's this guy? It's like, wait a minute. I thought she's having an affair with Paul Schadenfreude. What's going on here?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I did enjoy this more than I expected.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. I was just saying, I agree with you. I don't think the time jumps. I think that's the least effective part of the film. Mm-hmm. It wasn't enough to detract my engagement or enjoyment of the rest of it. But yeah, I definitely think. And I also agree with you that Josh, what's his face? I can't think of
O'Connor.
His name.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of him and I don't think he's great here and I don't think they have great chemistry. But yeah. So yeah. I actually agree with your criticisms, Evan. But for me, everything else is just working so well that I was like, yeah, those aren't great, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah. All right. Hey, cool.
Fair enough.
So that's not Windfall. That's Mothering Sunday.
No.
And now we're going to talk about All the Old Knives, which is another new movie, comes out today, if you're listening to this, the day the podcast comes out. This stars Chris Pine, Tandaway Newton, Lawrence Fishburne, Jonathan Pryce. Am I forgetting anybody?
Nope, that's it.
Directed by Janos Metz, written based on his book by Olin Steinhauer, pardon me. And here's your IMDb summary. Two CIA operatives and former lovers, reunite at idyllic Carmel by the Sea. No one calls it that, by the way, but okay. Carmel by the Sea to reexamine a mission 6 years ago in Vienna where a fellow agent may have been compromised. Intrigue.
His heart was compromised.
It sure was.
No.
Yep. So.
Coming in hot.
So All the Old Knives. You know, I was thinking when I was reading about this, I was like, you know, they don't fucking make spy movies. Like the last movie I can think of that was a spy movie that was like a quote serious unquote spy movie was Bridge of Spies. And so here you've got the one where it's just like people talking in rooms, basically.
The Courier. That was another one recently. Yeah.
Yep.
And I got to say, this movie kind of sucks. So.
Oh. I don't agree.
Oh my.
Really?
Oh. Yep, nope. Oh, then I want you to go first, Megan. Because.
Yeah, state your case.
Yeah. Let's.
No pressure.
Yeah. We're the grand jury and you're the first witness.
Convince me, Kearns.
Here's the thing. I already know why you guys don't like it. And I already know, like, I'm not actually here to say like, oh, this film's amazing. It's got some shitty dialogue. It's not really well written. I don't even think it's necessarily directed very well. But, and here is the big, and you know, there's an extreme amount of exposition and dialogue.
Oh boy, is there.
Partly because it's a spy movie. So I'm like, okay. That's par for the course, partially, but partly it's just, it's too much. However, for me, despite all those flaws, I enjoyed it because I will watch Tandaway Newton in anything. I will watch Chris Pine in pretty much anything. And I just loved watching the two of them together. I loved that their entire interaction, it taking place in current time, is at a bougie restaurant, very romantic, mm-hmm. The sun is setting. But underneath that, there's all this pain. There's all these questions between them. Neither one of them is being completely honest with the other. Neither one trusts the other. As we learn later, they both have hired, he's has an assassin ready to kill her. You know, she's contacted the CIA. So they both have their own agendas, but there's still so much love between them. And I found that facet of the film riveting. And I found it really interesting, their dynamic. And I think Tandaway Newton is an incredible actress. And I think she's very, very expressive. And Chris Pine is less so. And I think he's much better in roles where he can just kind of be unleashed and like really charismatic or really kind of over the top. And he's very inscrutable here for most of it. But that's kind of the point because he's masking so many things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, I don't think this is like a great film or good film per se. But the acting and their chemistry and what was happening really worked for me. And I was a sobbing mess by the end of the film. I was kind of, it blindsided me. I was not expecting it, but I could not stop crying at the end. And so, yeah, so it ended up working for me. And I was surprisingly interested the whole time. So, but I'm not surprised that you guys didn't like it.
Well, I'm going to break in here with a little anecdote about what I was thinking about when I was watching this movie.
Was it tacos?
No. But it
cotton candy
probably could have been.
No, that was the Patreon.
So I'm watching this movie and I'm like blah blah blee, hitting all the points, bloobity blue blue blue. And then they're at the restaurant and it's the second time Chris Pine goes to the bathroom, which is weird. Okay, I mean,
for a dude, yes.
She doesn't go to the bathroom once and you've gone twice. Like, even if I weren't a spy, I'd be like, what the fuck are you going to, you doing blow, what are you doing?
Right. You know?
Well, the first time he did say, I'm going to give you a minute to come up with your story or get your story straight.
Right.
That's true. He did.
Second time was water splashing, stressed out bathroom trip. Typical of movies and TV.
So, yeah, nobody does that in real life. But it's like nobody eats out of Chinese containers with chopsticks in real life and nobody splashes water on their face. Anyway, so he goes to the bathroom for the second time and then the hitman comes in. And if you haven't been paying attention, it's the guy at the bar. I don't know how anybody could like miss that guy and be like, oh, he's not
creepy
the
looking guy, by the way. Yeah. He's not, you know, he's not innocuous looking guy at the bar. Yeah.
So anyway, this is what I'm thinking about. So Chris Pine does his old dumb water in the face thing and he drives off. And then the hitman comes in. He's like, you got to give me a yes or no, dude. I mean, come on. And he washes his hands and then he doesn't dry them. And then he pats Chris Pine on the shoulder and you can see the watermark from his hand on Chris Pine's jacket. And I thought, that's a real bathroom. That's real water. He really washed his hands and then he patted Chris Pine on the shoulder because that's just way too much CGI for such a small moment. And that's what I thought about. That's what I thought about. That's what I think about when I think about this movie.
The washing the hands and not CGI.
Let me ask you another question. Is that good or bad?
I don't think it's good.
No.
No,
it's not good.
I just think the whole setup was just so, I'm broken record again. This is just like, I did this once already and I don't remember if I did this during Windfall or if I did it on the Patreon because I'm so out of it right now.
You did it during Windfall.
Thank you. It's just like the movie opens up with one of those J.J. Abrams, like, you know, flashbacks before the opening credits. And it's just like, you know, she's a sobbing mess because there's been this hijacking and, you know, all these passengers have been killed. And then he's chasing after her. And by the way, it's snowing. It's not snowing. He's running through the streets of Vienna trying to find her. And he runs down this street. And then he just turns around, doesn't move streets, doesn't change time. And then there's just snow everywhere. Nice editing. And then you got an hour and 40 minutes of being like, well, Chris Pine is obviously the bad guy here, or quote, bad guy, unquote. So how long do I have to wait to find that out? You know? So what was more interesting to me was like, you know, it's just like, it was just so tedious because I'm like, you don't just leave the CIA and move to Carmel mm-hmm. and start a family. That's just dumb. You know, maybe.
Wait, why?
Or maybe you can do that in real life. You don't do that in the movies. You don't get away from the CIA in the movies.
Yeah, you don't get to leave the life. You either keep working till you die.
And there's that guy she sees.
But she doesn't get to leave.
That's right. That's right. Because that's what I mean. There's the guy who shows up at the grocery store and then he's outside the grocery store. And I'm just like, okay, well, this guy's going to work into this. And at that point, I was like, is this Chris Pine's hitman? Because Chris Pine's already talked to his hitman. And we're like, no, that seems a little too like the professional hitman. I don't think would be like next to her at the grocery store. And so this, the whole like it, there's no good moment like in Rope when Farley Granger's like cat and mouse, you know, there's none of that. It's like, She's the cat. He's the mouse. Boom. It's over. Who fucking cares?
That's how I felt.
I mean, I don't mean to like crap on anybody's whatever. I don't, I'm not, I know that you, despite the problems that you have with it, Megan, that you, yeah. you did like it. And I don't want to take, I don't want to take away from that. But
I mean,
Evan,
I think that is the one strong thing about the movie. Cause I also found it very tedious. I didn't really, I had very little emotional investment in the plot, but I did like Chris Pine and Tandy Wade Newton together. I mm-hmm. think there was something there. It did feel like a real chemistry and affection. That part of the story did feel real to me, yeah. even though it felt yes. like the other elements around them were just kind of like stock spy movie tropes. Okay, there's a hijacking. Yeah. There's it went awry because somebody there's a mole. Okay, what? Where's the mole? Oh wait, it's some guy who like mysteriously resurfaced and now he's the you know, and he's got to go back and check the boxes and talk to people and they're gonna recite their story and we're gonna sit there in the bars and watch them retell their stories about what happened. Like those parts were tedious, but it did. Seem like Chris Pine's and Tandy Wade Newton's chemistry was real and that there was real romance between their characters. They did really care about each other to the point where, you know, when Chris Pine is poisoned and dying because they poison him to make it look like a suicide and she has to just sit there while he's dying.
A suicide
that
did, in a restaurant.
That was an emotional, yeah, that is an emotional moment. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, Chris Pine is dying and the hitman's on the phone demanding like, all right, I need a confirmation. This is a go or no go on killing Tandy Wade Newton while she's walking away.
That would have been amazing if he had shot and killed Tandy Wade Newton because it would have been like this movie earned back all its money. But
yeah, no. That would have been quite the twist because he's groaning and dying. So either the hitman just hears what he wants to hear. He hears him say yes, even though he doesn't say yes, or he's just an asshole and does it anyways.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said, like, you need to actually say yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what I'm talking about. I agree, obviously. But like that scene, that death scene is so sad. It's so tragic because she mm-hmm. still, as he's dying, doesn't understand why he was the mole. She doesn't understand why he did it, why he threw everything away. And which is the whole reason she bolted, because she found out that he was the one who leaked information. And not to get into all the specifics, but it's because he was essentially blackmailed and she was mm-hmm. threatened. So he wanted to save her. But it's just so sad. And there's another scene that kind of is similar in a way as far as their connection goes. Earlier in the film, he asks, he's like, you just disappeared. He's like, why did you leave? Where did you go? And you see her, she's like hunched forward before, like they're really into this conversation. And she like stops, braces herself, backs up. And she's like, I liked this better when this was an interrogation. And it's like, ooh, she's protecting herself here and she doesn't want to go there. But then they do go there emotionally and it's, mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, so for me, the emotional resonance and their chemistry is really what that's what elevates this film and really saves it for me. Yeah, because if you take that out, no, this movie's no good. The other elements are not good.
Right.
Oh, the other thing I want to say too, the other thing I had a major problem with is, okay, so they're trying, it seems, to make a commentary on U.S. militarism and colonialism about how the U.S. drops bombs on myriad communities, which is true, mm-hmm. and that's a really, really important issue, really important topic. Let's get into that. Okay, great. And you have the hijackers talking about how they speak for victims all over the world. Okay, sure. But then they never really do anything with it, and they never really make an effective commentary. And so all it did for me, because the hijackers are from Chechnya and Iran, is all they end up doing is just reifying Islamophobic tropes.
Yeah, and that's true.
It was really sad to see. Because I thought it was going to make this really interesting commentary about how shitty U.S. is as far as foreign policy goes and military choices go, and it just, yeah, it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it was too interested in being a spy thriller. And like, here's the thing, Chris Pine, for a guy who's supposed to be smart, You're not very smart. Because, you know, he says to her, it's like, you just like fucking left. What? Then I didn't know why. Think about it, asshole. I mean, just a fucking plane full of people just died and you're the one link. Like, what are you, dumb? Oh my God.
Yes.
How did a guy this average get to be in the CIA? It's because you look like Chris Pine, right? Ay, ay, ay. I also did not like, I like Lawrence Fishburne just fine, but him being on autopilot in this was really kind of a bummer. You know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was
just a nothing role for an actor of that stature to like play that part, which he has done before, that reserved, you know, a lot going on behind the eyes kind of thing. It's just like, this guy's been a professional actor since he was like 14. Can we give him something else to do? So,
oh my God, he was 14. That's right.
Yeah. He's in Apocalypse Now. So like,
yep.
Anyway. Yeah. And Jonathan Pryce not really doing anything that he hasn't done before, you know? So it's just kind of like, I can see why you made those casting choices because they're available and they're great. But also, I just thought a lot about this was clumsy. But I'm glad that you had a good time with the human relationships, Megan.
I did. It cut very close to the bone for me. It felt very... very personal in certain ways. Cause old lovers, exes reuniting brings up a lot of shit. And I think that element, because of the lead performances, that did it well. But yeah, the rest, no.
Okay. Evan, do you have any closing thoughts?
Oh, I mentioned it earlier, but I think I was also surprised by the quantity of sex scenes in this movie. And the nudity.
A lot of naked.
Chris Pine's butt from multiple vantage points.
And a lot of naked Tandaway Newton, too. I'm just like, she's naked a lot in this, too.
Yep.
I mean, they're both nice looking people, so why not? But anyway, so...
I was going to say, if you're going to get a lot of nudity of a woman, equal opportunity. Yeah. Let's do dudes too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you see a lot of Chris Pine when he's in that, he's in the shower way too long, by the way. It's like she's got enough time to see that the bad guy's calling you, to go through your pockets, to find all this stuff. Get out of the shower, man. Okay, anyway.
He did take a
That was a long shower for a movie. I mean, how long must it have been real life? Okay. So that was all the old knives. So let's recap, everybody. Windfall is on HBO Max right now. I think we've got
Netflix. Sorry.
I beg your pardon. You're correct. It's on Netflix. I think we have two solid yeses from you two.
Yes.
And you've got a Your Mileage May Vary from me, which is now becoming my trope. Mothering Sunday. I think you got hard yeses from Megan and me. Yeah?
Yeah. Yes.
And a maybe from him?
Yeah, I'm kind of middle of the road, but I'm leaning towards yes. I think there's something there.
Yep. Mothering Sunday comes out in theaters, by the way, today, and so does All the Old Knives. How do we feel about that, gang?
No.
All the Old Knives is also on Amazon Prime. Yeah. Like I said, I got something out of it. I really love their performances and I like the reuniting lover aspect. But yeah, if you're there for the spy thriller part, you're going to be wildly disappointed.
Yeah. I think you're on board with that assessment, right, Evan? This is like a nay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm a hard nay, by the way, just in case anybody's wondering.
And I enjoyed it, but again, I think we all should use the Your Mileage May Vary. Yeah. Use it. Your Mileage May Vary.
Yeah, I think your mileage varied on this one for sure. Yeah.
Yes.
Got a few extra miles to the gallon on that movie.
Yeah. It was a hybrid vehicle for you. For Evan and me, it was like only 19 miles to the gallon. Just
yes.
1970s Cadillac mileage.
Ooh,
that's right. That's 13 miles to the gallon. That's nothing. All right. So anyway, so that was Spoiler Piece Theater for this week. Want to say thank you to everybody for listening. We want to say thank you to our editor, Otto Klammer. Otto, you are the best. Thank you.
Thanks, Otto.
Thanks, Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you find podcasts. If you would like to find us at our website, that's spoilerpiece.com, where we have merch. We have links to merch. Spoilerpiece.com.
Merch.
I like the word merch. I like that you just like you shorten merchandise. I mean, come on. You can find us on the social medias. We're Spoiler Piece Theater on Facebook, at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. If you would like to get in touch with us, please send us an email, spoilerpiece@gmail.com. We would love to hear your comments, et cetera, on why, no, actually, old All the Old Knives is amazing. You know, whatever. Whatever you got to say. Or you can give us a call.
At 862-21-PIECE.
Leave a voicemail. Tell us, you know, whether you had cotton candy or, you know, some other snack. We were tacos, you know, during one of the movies. That's a whole other thread.
Give us your rendition of All the Old Knives.
Yeah, exactly. If you like the show, please rate and review us by going to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece, or you can rate us directly on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That helps us out a lot. More people talk about us, more people hear us, et cetera, et cetera. You know how it works. And if you really, really like the show, please consider joining our Patreon. Like I said at the start, we talk about Moonshot this week, a sci-fi rom-com question mark. And that's over on our Patreon for our $5 and up patrons. And that is Spoiler Piece Theater. My name is Dave Riedel. I write about movies. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. And if you want to follow me on the intertweets, I'm at Dave Sees Movies on Spoiler Piece. That's not true. I'm at Dave Sees Movie on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd. I don't know what my problem is. It's like 11 o'clock at night.
My name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd as Real Recon. That's real as in film reel. And I also just wanted to throw in a quick plug that recently I was on the Film Trace podcast. Shout out to the Film Trace guys. We talked about Cabin in the Woods and Teeth as part of their new season on self-aware horror movies. So definitely check that out. Check out Film Trace.
Nice. And my name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I too am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week where I'll be more with it. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.